Today on the 21st show, daylight saving time is starting up again as we head for the long days of spring and summer. There are some who want us to permanently spring forward, and others who'd have us fall back for good. We'll talk about the science and history behind daylight saving, how it affects our bodies and minds, and the debate over whether to scrap it or keep it year-round. I'm Brian Mackey. That's all coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WNIJ in Rockford-DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, news. From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. This weekend, Americans will take part in a long-standing ritual. We're talking, of course, about the annual springing forward of the clocks, which marks the start of daylight saving time. It causes a lot of frustration whether the clocks spring forward or fall back.
The good news is you get an extra hour of sleep. The bad news, it's going to start getting darker outside earlier.
I still haven't found a clear reason why we do this incredibly stupid ritual here in the United States of sunsets at 4 in the afternoon.
It's like voluntary jet lag. Literally no one likes jet lag. Why would we do it to ourselves by choice?
And yet, daylight saving time continues. If polling is any indication, a lot of us can agree on getting rid of it, but not so much over how to get rid of it. For our program today, we're going to revisit the conversation we had about this in the fall of 2024, not long after the end of that year's period of daylight saving time. The conversation will reflect that, but there are still a lot of good points as they pertain to DST in general. Later in the hour, we'll get into the finer points of the debate with the authors of some books that look at our relationship with sleep. But we start with two Illinois doctors who've looked at how daylight saving time affects our minds and bodies. Dr. Sabra Abbott is a physician and an associate professor of neurology and sleep medicine at Northwestern University in Chicago. And Dr. James Rowley is a professor of medicine and director of the Sleep Medicine Fellowship at Rush University in Chicago. He's also a past president of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, which is based in Darien in the Chicago suburbs. Again, we originally had this conversation in fall 2024. Because of that, we're not taking calls today, but you can always let us know what you thought. Our email address is talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. All right, Dr. Rowley, let's talk about these effects. What do we know about the effect of the switch to and from daylight saving time that it has on our health and safety?
Yes, The spring change is probably the one that has the most effects when we lose an hour of sleep. Clearly, an hour of sleep deprivation will make someone feel more sleepy, more fatigued over the few days after the change. But there's also very good evidence that there's an increase in accidents. There's an increase in heart disease incidents after the change as well. So there's definitely, while most of us feel that personal fatigue and everything, we have to understand that a lot of other people are undergoing more serious effects as well.
What sort of serious effects are you talking about?
Well, again, accidents go up.
You're talking, okay, so the societal sort. Yeah. Okay.
Right, yeah, society things. Having a heart attack goes up after the season change. So.
Okay. Dr. Abbott, let me ask you, so that's the sort of broader health effect. How does daylight saving affect our sleep in particular?
So it's really interesting, and I noticed that in the little introductory piece, you had a little comment about how it's kind of like giving ourselves jet lag. What actually happens is the entire time that we are on daylight saving time, our body never quite catches up to that time change because our body is still following the rise and set of the sun, not necessarily the clock time. So the data actually shows us that on average, we end up losing about 20 minutes minutes of sleep during the time that we're on daylight saving time. And if you look at actual physiological markers of your internal timing, you never actually catch up. So instead of it being like traveling to another time zone, what really happens, it's kind of like you're living in Illinois and you took a job in Boston and you're constantly having to work an hour ahead of what your body is actually wanting to do.
And that's because of the time change, not just because of the greater amount of sunlight or the fact that the sun comes up earlier, even without the time change, right? Where we live on the hemispheric or the lines of latitude. That's the word I'm looking for.
So I think it's interesting because I think there's a universal thought that we want to get rid of these biannual time changes. But because of the fact that we're moving into standard time at the same time that days are also getting shorter, there's kind of a misperception that it's because of switching back to standard time that we also are getting much less sunlight. That would happen regardless. It's just where we line up those hours of sunlight that we do have left with the rest of our day.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. And I'm probably guilty of that sort of a fallacy of thinking as well. All right. So do we need to take just a step back and briefly explain, Dr. Abbott, why sleep is so important to us and, you know, our latest scientific understanding of that? It's not just something that's relaxing. There's like real potential consequences to sleep deprivation.
How much time do we have? I think we could probably spend an entire show talking about all of the very important aspects of sleep. Basically, we know that sleep deprivation increases your risk for pretty much any negative health condition that you could name out there, whether it's increased risk for any sort of heart disease, diabetes, your mood goes down with sleep deprivation. And so we know that it has really broad health impacts beyond just, you know, are you a little bit more awake? Can you do better in your job during the daytime?
Dementia is one that I've heard as well.
Yes,
that particularly
frightens me.
Yeah. All right. Dr. Rolle, so we've talked about how our sleep is affected. Why does daylight saving mess with our sleep and really just our relationship with the world around us?
Yeah, part of it is what a lot of people don't realize is that it's actually sun in the morning that helps set our clock, our body clocks. And then it's relative darkness in the evening that helps set the stage to fall asleep at what would be considered a, quote, normal time, which, you know, is generally sometime between 10 p.m. and midnight for the majority of people. So by having more sunshine into the evening, that can help prevent us from falling asleep. But then having more darkness in the morning also prevents that clock setting correctly so that we want to fall asleep at, quote, that range of time that would be considered normal for society.
So what do we know? Let's talk about some of these ideas that people have about changing. And Dr. Rolle, I'll stay with you. What do we know about what people think about getting rid of the time changes?
Well, I think the first thing is that most people think that they're getting an extra hour of sunshine with daylight savings time, which is really just not correct. We're just pushing an hour into the hour of sunshine into the evening hours. As Dr. Abbott already mentioned, the sun and the earth revolves around the sun in a way that it's constantly, you know, getting shorter and longer throughout the year. And so you don't get an extra hour of sun just by moving the clock around. You just change the time of the day that we see it. So that's the first thing people have to realize is that you're not really getting extra sunshine by going to daylight saving time. But that extra sunshine in the evening for a lot of people is just a nice thing to have. It allows them to do more things in the summertime in the evening. Until about a year and a half ago, I lived in Michigan. Michigan being at the western end of the time zone.
Yeah.
In the summertime, sun didn't go down until 9:30. You know,
right.
People were out playing golf at 9 o'clock at night. So there's definitely, you know, people like that. They want that, right? To be able to sort of go into the evening because they'd rather sleep in a little bit in the morning and not be up when the sunshine would be there if we stayed on standard time. So I think a lot of it is how people just perceive their day, and getting more sun in the evening just is more fun, more relaxing, more whatever you want to call it for people.
Yeah, and so I hear you that it's not actually more sunlight in terms of the quantity, but
Right.
if we're not willing to set our alarms an hour earlier to capture the sunlight when
That's
it's
right.
in the early dawn, then effectively for some of us, especially the more night owly of us, it feels that way.
That is exactly right. And that's why there's a lot of pushback from changing it too, right? Because a lot of industries are somewhat supportive of that extra light in the evening, particularly tourism, because in places, again, like Michigan or other places on western ends of time zones, there's a lot of extra, not extra sunlight, but there's a lot of extra sunlight in the evening, which allows people to out do things, spend money, etc.
Yeah, we took a family trip ourselves to Mackinac Island last year, and
Oh,
boy, it is weird to be out there after 9 p.m. playing mini golf
that's
as
right.
we were. All right, I want to share a message. We asked our listeners in our text messaging group about this, and I think surveys have shown that about 10% of people want to keep the time change, but it seems like a lot of them are in our texting group. Holly and Silvis, for example, told us too many students wear dark clothes walking to and waiting at the bus stops in the morning. We need that hour of daylight in the mornings so drivers can see them and your kids stay safe. And if we don't change it back before the summer, the sun will be up at 5 a.m., sundown around 8 p.m. That's too early for summertime nights. Please keep daylight saving time for the safety of kids during dark school mornings and the mental health related to sun therapy and later days in the summer. Dr. Abbott, what do you think of that?
So I think that your listener brings up some really interesting points, and that's actually part of why we are advocating so much to make sure that we still have standard time in the winter. Because if you were to keep daylight saving time year round, for example, which is the current proposal that's out there, it actually would make things even worse for children. And so when they've tried that previously, there are many parts of the country where sunrise wouldn't actually happen until after 8 a.m. And we had to go back and restore standard time because there were actually incidents with children being hit at the bus stop waiting in the dark. And so I think absolutely we need to keep standard time during the winter. The debate is whether we keep standard time during the summer as well. To kind of touch back on your previous point from Dr. Rowley about living at the western edge of the time zone. The interesting thing is, if you look at data comparing people who live in the extreme western edge of the time zone to those just over the line to the eastern edge of the time zone, there actually are multiple negative health consequences to being on that far western side. So, having that late sunrise and that late sunset. And so that ranges from increased depression, increased cancer. And so that's part of why we're advocating that even though we like having that extra hour of sunlight in the evening in the summer, from a health standpoint, we really think that you should be getting that light exposure earlier in the day.
Huh. So Illinois is in a pretty good position then, being on
We
the
are, we are.
yeah. Okay. All right. Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're talking about daylight saving time from the way it affects us, when many of us don't seem to like the switch, but also we as a society haven't really seemed to be able to move past the despite efforts, the change that we've been doing for generations now. We heard from a lot of you on this in our texting group. Tommy in Urbana said, "I like the time change. I feel most people are just complaining." We also heard from Devin in Champaign, who said, "We should get rid of it and stick to standard time. Noon in a given time zone should roughly correspond to solar noon. If businesses and schools need to adjust their hours for different seasons, so be it." Tommy and Devin, thank you both. And Devin, stay with us. We're going to be talking about school start times in particular a little later in the hour. But for now, we are talking about this with two physicians, Dr. James Rowley, who's with Rush University and is also past president of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, and Dr. Sabra Abbott with Northwestern University. All right, one more text. Matt in Champaign said, "End it now. The research is pretty solid on the negative health effects right now. I think daylight saving time. I hate it being so dark early in the day. I'm still waking up early with the light, but honestly, I'd go with whatever the scientists who study this stuff deem best." If I missaid it, I think he's advocating for staying with daylight saving time year-round. Dr. Rowley, what is the consensus medically on this?
Medically, it's that we should go to permanent standard time. And that is the position of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, and several other groups, which is part of a coalition that we've put together to advocate for federal legislation on this matter. Because the only way to change, to get rid of the time zone, the time changes twice a year, is through federal legislation.
And Dr. Abbott, have you seen this evolve in the past few years? I mean, we're going to get into the political side of this a little later in the show, but the U.S. Senate, I think, passed a bill a couple of years ago that would have made daylight saving time permanent. I understand that riled up parts of the medical community.
It definitely did, and I think there's been a huge advocacy movement within the sleep, circadian, and general medical communities because of that. I have to say, I suspect this was deliberate. They brought that vote before the Senate in the week immediately following the spring time change. So I think they brought it at a time where everybody was kind of miserable from the time change. And so they said, sure, we'll switch to whatever you say if we don't have to keep doing this. It's just the general consensus from the medical community is that it's in the wrong direction, that instead of doing permanent daylight saving time, we should do permanent standard time.
All right, we need to take a break. Again, we are revisiting our conversation on daylight saving time, first broadcast in fall of 2024. Of course, now we are getting ready to spring our clocks forward this weekend. Coming up, we'll hear more from Dr. Sabra Abbott at Northwestern University and Dr. James Rowley at Rush. We'll also dive deeper into the debate about what we should do about daylight saving time. No calls today, but you've been hearing some of the thoughts we got from listeners from our texting group when we originally aired this conversation. You can join that group, share your thoughts on the things we talk about on the program. Just send the word talk to 217-803-0730. Again, text talk, TALK, to 217-803-0730. And you can find information on that and more at our website, 21stShow.org. We've got links to our past segments there, as well as ways to subscribe to our podcast. Again, 21stShow.org. All right, more to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And over the weekend, the clocks will move forward 1 hour as we begin daylight saving time. That is our topic for the hour today. We're revisiting a conversation we had about this back in fall 2024, shortly after the clocks fell back that year. The medical consensus, according to our guests today, is that we probably ought to be going to standard time year-round. We're hearing from Dr. Sabra Abbott, physician and associate professor of neurology in sleep medicine at Northwestern University in Chicago, and Dr. James Rowley, professor of medicine and director of the Sleep Medicine Fellowship at Rush University in Chicago. He's also a past president of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. Again, our program's on tape today, so no calls, but you can always let us know what you thought. Talk at 21stShow.org. Okay. Back to this pre-recorded conversation and some calls we did get. Mary is calling from Freeport, Illinois, on line one. Mary, thank you for calling in.
Hi, my name's Mary Ann. I've worked in healthcare since 1966 as a pharmacist in hospitals and in retails. And a lot of times your shift is not of your choosing. If you're working and somebody can't come in, you have to stay for a double shift. And if you're not working and they need somebody early, you have to go in. If you're working and they have what's called an AM admit time, that means your work starts at around 4 o'clock and you have to drive in and, you know, you work until the jobs, until the procedures are done. And I'm 80. I'm fine. I don't think I've ever had any bad effects from the shift work, but I have a feeling that probably a lot of people do.
And would you have preferred, and maybe you still are working, I don't want to assume, you know, having daylight saving time or standard time when you were driving to work in the evenings or after late afternoons?
Well, actually, if it was a day where you had to be there at 5 o'clock, I would leave my house at 4:30. And a lot of times I wouldn't be driving back until about 5 o'clock in the evening. So, you know, it really, this sounds awful, but having an extra hour at the beginning or end for me would not have made any difference.
Didn't make that much difference. Yeah.
Okay. I imagine another people would. My father worked at the BP oil refinery in Whiting, Indiana, and his was a rotating shift, too. And the same reason people choose rotating shifts is because there's a nice pay differential.
Mm. All right. Mary, thank you for calling in and sharing your story. I appreciate it. Bob is calling from Springfield on line two. Bob, thank you for calling in.
Yes, thank you. I'm in support of going to standard time all year round. They tried to push daylight saving time down our throats since World War One. They had it. They took it away. There was a Supreme Court ruling that said that I believe it was Massachusetts could adjust their clocks if they so desired. It was in the late 20s or early 30s. They brought back daylight saving time in World War Two, and they did away with it. Then they brought it back, and they keep extending it. I think they wait too long to turn the clocks back now because we've almost lost all the sunset time. We're almost to the earliest sunset time. I think today is, we only have about 11 more minutes, 10 more, 9 or 10 more minutes to lose before we're at our earliest sunset time. I think that if we went to standard time within a year or so, everyone would get used to it and there wouldn't be such a big deal made about having that extra hour at night. It's as has been pointed out, if we were on daylight saving time all year, sunrise wouldn't be till 8:30, 9 o'clock. The further north you go, the later it would be, and we would have kids standing out at the bus stop and in darkness, people arriving to work in darkness, and it's harder for our bodies to wake up in the morning when it's dark. They tried it in the mid-70s, and within a year they did away with it because of what has already been pointed out, and we just need to end this stupid daylight stupid time and adjusting our clocks twice a year. They lied to us and told us it was about saving energy. It doesn't save any energy to be on daylight stupid time in March. I don't think they could go much earlier. When they adjust the clocks in March, we're back to late, you know, we're back to sunrise times that are in December and January. So I don't see how they could go much earlier. Yeah. And I don't see how they could go much later. It's already late enough, and they just need to do away with it and go to standard time and be done with it.
All right. Bob, thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate your passion you bring to this issue. You know, I was reminded of this quote in this book I read from Winston Churchill. This was about his early life. It was written actually before World War II, before he sort of had his late life renaissance. But he had this line in there. He said, "I have no doubt that the Romans planned their timetable of their days far better than we do. They rose before the sun at all seasons, except in wartime. We never see the dawn. Sometimes we see sunset. The message of the sunset is sadness. The message of the dawn is hope." Again, that was Winston Churchill writing in, I think, the 1930s. Dr. Rowley, so there's obviously still plenty of disagreement on this issue, politically speaking. And so I suspect it's, like so many things in America, it's going to be a push for a while now. What are some ways we can better adjust and adapt ourselves when these time changes do come around?
Yeah. First, I just want to point out there are two states in the United States that do not change times twice a year, Arizona and Hawaii, both high tourism states. So it can be done and done well. And so I think that's important to point out. I think it is important in the spring. It's particularly important to try to adjust yourself a little bit beforehand. It's generally recommended to try to go to bed a little bit earlier for the two or three nights prior to the time change so that maybe you can get a little bit more sleep and also move your body clock a little bit as you go into it. It's also important to just keep the same rhythms that you would have day to day and let your body get up with the sun, go to bed with the darkness like we would any other time of the year. In the fall, obviously getting an extra hour of sleep, most people actually need it. The key though is not to stay up an extra hour. You should go to bed when you would normally go to bed.
Guilty. Yes.
And allow your body to wake up when it would. And for a lot of people, you'll probably get that extra hour of sleep on your own without an alarm being set. So those are some of the general advice that I give to people when they ask me about this.
Yeah. People will get that extra sleep because we're a perpetually sleep deprived society.
Right.
Dr. Abbott, so beyond daylight saving, any advice for building better relationships with our circadian rhythms and our sleep?
So I think the most important thing is really consistency. And so our body clock keeps the same time every day. And so if as much as we can try to go to bed at the same time, wake up at the same time, have your meals at the same time, that does help with overall alignment, making sure that you're actually getting a lot of bright light during the daytime and then minimizing light at night. All of these things can help keep you healthy from a sleep and a circadian standpoint.
All right, Dr. Sabra Abbott and Dr. James Rowley, thank you for sharing your expertise with us today on the 21st Show.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for having us.
It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. For the entire hour today, we're talking about daylight saving time. It's something a majority of Americans have wanted to get rid of, but we are nevertheless still moving forward an hour in the spring and then back an hour in the fall. At this point, we want to take a step back and reflect on the bigger picture of this argument, as well as the ways that we as everyday people experience some of the struggles of daylight saving time. We talked about this back in fall 2024 with Heather Turgeon and Julie Wright. They're psychotherapists who specialize in sleep and parenting. Together, they've written a couple of books on sleep, The Happy Sleeper and Generation Sleepless, Why Tweens and Teens Aren't Sleeping Enough and How We Can Help Them. Again, our program's on tape, so no calls today, but you can let us know what you thought. Talk at 21stshow.org. So, Heather, we heard from the doctors at the beginning of the program about what the research tells us about how daylight saving affects us, but maybe we can take it a little, you know, more to the ground, to the level of everyday experience. Can you just talk about some of the ways we feel daylight saving time and the clock changes?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, the major... We work with parents of babies and young children and with teenagers. So I think one of the most acute, you know, feelings that we have, experiences that we have when the clock changes is a feeling of jet lag. And, you know, we hear from parents, you know, kind of panicked and dreading the time change because it throws off their babies and little kids' schedules so much, and something that they've worked so hard to get finely tuned and just get on track. And then all of a sudden it's kind of just derailed by the time change. And I think that the guest that you had on the first part of the show just really spoke to this, but when we get towards the winter time, when the solar day is getting shorter, just by virtue of, you know, nature and the way that we're aligned with the sun, and we still are in daylight saving time, at that point, we are hearing from so many teenagers who are basically waking up feeling underwater. And this is a population that is it is the most sleep deprived population that we have, these teenagers. Somewhere between 80 and 90% are chronically sleep deprived. So we feel, you know, in our practice, teenagers are struggling especially with that time change and waking up in the dark and being, you know, out of their circadian rhythms are out of line with their day. So there's those acute changes that we feel. And then as the doctors were mentioning, the chronic misalignment that we have throughout the year as a result.
Julie, can you talk more about that? The idea of teenagers? I mean, I was a teenager myself once. I didn't sleep enough. But I didn't have smartphones when I was a teenager, and I didn't even really have the internet. I think I got an email address my last year, toward the end of my high school senior year. So is it different now, or is this sort of like same story, different chapter?
Well, you're right that technology plays a big role in stealing sleep from our teenagers and actually many other age groups as well. But teenagers have a unique challenge. We call it the perfect storm in Generation Sleepless. And it includes things like a later biological clock. Teenagers get tired later in the evening and for that reason need to sleep later in the morning. They also, teenagers today, I'm probably older than you and I barely had any homework when I was in high school, but teenagers today have a load of homework. They're loaded with activities. There's a lot of pressure to do a lot in preparation for college admissions. And if you, so we have this crunch in the evening where they're getting less sleep for all of these reasons, then you add the advent of technology, as you mentioned, to it, and that just, you know, makes them stay up even later. And then when you have too early start times in the morning, which a lot of schools across the country have, their sleep is already getting crunched on both sides. And when you add daylight saving time to this mix, as Heather was saying, in the fall before we change the clocks back, it's dark in the morning when they wake up. It's really hard for them. Their brains don't wake up well, and they're going to school in a very sleepy state. They're also coming off of a summer where, as Dr. Abbott mentioned, they have lost about 20 minutes of sleep every single night throughout the whole summer. So they're coming into school already sleep deprived. So these are just a few of the reasons that teenagers have an extra challenge, and we add daylight saving time to it. The other thing that happens, we have a couple of states. California has a new law where high schools cannot start any earlier than 8:30, but something like permanent daylight saving time would in effect erase that benefit that the high schoolers of California get from that new law. So we feel very much like the doctors that you had on earlier. We could really go on and on about why we would stand behind permanent standard time as the best and healthiest choice.
Why is, you know, what you mentioned this point, I'm professionally, politically try to remain neutral on many different topics that we talk about on the show. I got to say, school start times, though, is one where I feel so strongly that they're just way too early. I think my schooling started in 7:45 or so. I think one of my producers had choir practice. She said it's 7 in the morning. Why does this persist now that we're no longer primarily an agrarian economy, or whatever reason people will say for why we need early start times?
I think there's a few reasons. One is people don't like change. So when you go to a school and you say, and when we wrote Generation Sleepless, we interviewed the people behind the nonprofit advocacy group, Start School Later. And it was amazing, their stories of trying to help districts and individual schools make these changes. There's so much resistance to change. It's just sort of what people are used to. And they're not putting teenagers' health and safety first. They're putting their kind of what they're used to. The teachers union in California, in Los Angeles, was kind of opposed to it too, I believe, because it's, you know, they're used to getting out earlier, and people have their schedules that they like and they've become accustomed to. So I think there's just kind of a resistance to change. And I think that it's complicated when you move start times, because the bus schedules of every school get very finely tuned with the middle schools and the elementary schools in that district. And then when you say, oh, let's just move the start time by 45 minutes, now you've messed up the entire bus schedule. So it really does come down to a lot of logistical issues that have to get sorted out. And in California, I live in Los Angeles, we have moved our start time from 7:45 to 8:30 at our local school. And there was a lot of, you know, anxiety around it, like, how's this going to go? The teachers weren't into it at first. But now I've spoken to teachers who are like, it's great. I really like it. The students are awake. The students are more rested and they're not like dozing off in class as much.
All right, we need to take a quick break on the program. We're hearing from psychotherapists Heather Turgeon and Julie Wright. They've written multiple books on sleep, including The Happy Sleeper and Generation Sleepless, Why Tweens and Teens Aren't Sleeping Enough, and How We Can Help Them. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with them about daylight saving time. We originally aired this back in fall 2024. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us.
It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Today we're talking about daylight saving time as we get ready to spring forward. We're talking about how the annual ritual affects our sleep, our health, and our lives. A few more of the text messages we got when we first aired this back in fall 2024. Christina in Rock Falls said, "I don't like falling back and would rather have a dark morning. I don't enjoy that it's already dark when I get off work at 5. As a student and a lifelong night owl, I'd have a preferred later start. When my kids were in school, I needed an early start because my job started early. The option to choose would be nice." Lloyd in Danville said, "So time changes have always come down to economics. Younger kids should start late, older ones earlier." Our guests are Heather Turgeon and Julie Wright, psychotherapists who specialize in sleep and parenting. Together, they've written a couple of books on sleep and how it affects the younger people in our lives. Again, this is originally from fall 2024. The calls you hear during the show today are on tape, but you can always let us know what you thought. Our email address is talk@21stshow.org. All right, back to the conversation and back to the phones. Laurel is calling from Carbondale on line 4. Thank you for calling in.
Yeah, well, thank you. I have a totally different perspective, more like the woman last, I think, was that text message. But for me, it's about children not playing outside anymore. I could hardly wait to get out of school. We never came home till it was dark. And I'm kind of like that now in the evenings and after work. I like to go for a walk in the daylight. I like to bird watch after work I just think it's terrible that children will spend more time inside. They're already inside too much. So that's my thought on it. And I don't like, yeah.
So you think, would you keep daylight saving permanently if you ruled the world?
Yes, I believe so, yeah. That's what it means, right? It would be, we wouldn't have fallen back.
Yeah. Sunrise would be pretty late, you know, after 9 a.m., I think, once we get into December.
Yeah, I'm not a get up and look at the sunrise, though. So,
up with you.
But I do love sunsets, so.
Yeah. All right. Laurel, thanks so much. I appreciate it. And Magnus is calling from Carterville on line 1. Magnus, thank you for calling in.
Hey, good morning, Brian. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. I just wanted to contribute to the school start time conversation. I remember when I was in high school, well over 10 years now, but we had to wait for the bus. The bus picked us up at 6:13 a.m., and then classes started at 7:25, so regardless of what time the sun came up, we were always in the dark. And, I found it very difficult as a teenager to get any amount of sleep with the amount of homework and everything else that was going on.
Yeah. And so that negative, do you think that negatively affected your experience in school?
Oh, absolutely. I was a terrible student. I think I graduated with maybe a 2.1 GPA, but then when I returned to college some years later, and was able to choose my own schedule, I came out as a 4.0 student.
Amazing. What a natural experiment. Magnus, thanks so much for sharing that. I appreciate it. Heather or Julie, do either of you want to respond to what we heard from some of our callers there?
Yeah, your last caller made such a good point, how his grade point average increased once he was able to sleep well. So what he needed was two things. He needed later school start time and standard time. That would have moved him, you know, in the right direction by at least 2 hours. So I think when we're thinking about our children and they're showing up at school, are they ready to learn? Are they ready to focus? What's their mood? Are they depressed? Have they had enough sleep the night before? And then we balance that against the economic benefits that are often cited by proponents of permanent daylight saving time, or even just keeping daylight saving time for half the year. You know, I think it's just a matter of really sitting back and looking at the science. And Heather and I understand the emotional appeal of moving our clocks and late, you know, feeling like we have more light in the evening. But I think what's missing also is something that one of the doctors mentioned earlier, is that our days are going to get shorter regardless. We're going to feel like it's getting darker earlier, even if we were in permanent standard time. So there's so many arguments for helping kids feel better in the morning, be safer in the morning, have less depression and anxiety. So I think chronotype plays a role too. So we've had people talk about being night owls. Night owls definitely would prefer, you know, the daylight saving time, whereas early birds are pretty happy with standard time.
Yeah. All right. Let's get one more caller in here. David is calling from Champaign on line two. Hi, David.
Hi there. I have a thought that when people go to work or they go to school in the morning, basically you get up and you do that. But when you come home from school or work, that's the time that you have that you can choose what to do. And that's why people like daylight savings time, because you like to do activities when it's light outside. You can do outdoor activities, or at least you can feel that you have part of the day for yourself. And so most people I know, and maybe that's because I'm a, quote, night owl, would much prefer having more daylight in the evening, because those are when you choose your activities, as opposed to those activities being prescribed for you.
David, I like this. It's like a freedom argument. Most of us don't have the privilege of setting our morning schedules. We got to be at school. We got to be at work. This show's at 11. I got to meet with my producers in the morning. I don't have a lot of flexibility on that, but I get to choose what to do with that extra hour of sunlight I might get in the evening. I like how you're saying that, David. Thanks for calling in and sharing that. I appreciate it. Heather, do you want to respond to that? Are we in a minority, or are we sort of selfishly trying to impose our night owlry on the rest of the population?
Not at all. I think it does really, I think it's such an interesting point that your listener brings up. And what I would say is that the majority of the benefit of all that sunlight in the evening that we get is because of the seasonal change. It's because of summer. So we kind of, when the time changes in March, we kind of tie daylight saving time, and just the word daylight saving time sounds like we're getting more daylight. And that's what the Senate passed, the Sunshine Protection Act, I think it was. It's like this sort of like, it's a good marketing. It's like as if we're getting more sun. So I think most of the benefit of having those longer evenings comes from the summer, not from daylight saving time. So that's one thing. And we would have more evening sun no matter what as the day gets longer, just because of the solar day. But I do think it's a really good point. And I think it's just, you know, it's sort of like our feeling of having the choice in the evening and more to do versus the importance of morning sun. And it's the importance of morning sun is something that we don't really, it's good for our health. It's good for our mental health. It lowers our risk of chronic disease over time. It makes our cortisol rise. So our brains are happier, but we don't necessarily attribute it to morning sun, so it's not something we're not that conscious of, but it has. So I think that the discussion is a lot around what are the health benefits, mental and physical health benefits. And the data is very clear that standard time is healthier versus our feeling about daylight saving time, which is like, oh, the sun's coming. You know, it's just that feeling we have that we have more sun. It is a more emotional argument, I think. So I think it makes sense. I think that's why we're still having this, you know, debate.
Yeah. All right. Well, on that debate, we have one more piece of tape to play here. This is Illinois State Representative Sue Scherer of Decatur. In 2021, she introduced legislation that would have had Illinois follow daylight saving time year round. She spoke about that with WCIA, the CBS station in Central Illinois. Let's listen to what she had to say.
In the olden days, we didn't have the capabilities to do all this research and figure out how harmful and detrimental it was.
So I think she's talking about the time change there. And I should say she supported sticking with daylight time. Even in our current session of the legislature, there are still dueling bills, one saying daylight saving time should be permanent, one saying standard time should be permanent. Why do you think we still see these legislatures and legislators taking different approaches on this?
I think politics plays a really big role. Politics is so intertwined with economics. You know, a lot of businesses prefer having daylight saving time because at least their perception is that they're bringing in more money during that extended evening light. And I think politicians also play on what Heather was talking about, the emotional appeal. And that, believe me, before Heather and I started really delving into the science, we didn't really understand all of this either. And we kind of liked it, you know, when daylight saving time came around. So we get how most people feel. Most people don't have this level of understanding about sleep science. So it's a very emotional feeling. It's something they don't want to give up.
You know, and we actually had this experience of this, right? We tried permanent daylight saving time 50 years ago. Franny and Hinckley in our texting group mentioned this. She said, later school start times is a great idea. DST definitely, though. Way back during the energy crisis, we stayed on DST. I loved it, Franny said. Thank you for that. So, Heather, I don't know, she was apparently in the minority on that experiment, at least by the time it ended. Go ahead.
I think I would say that, and I could be wrong here, I could be missing something, but I believe that every single time we have tried in this country and also around the world to have permanent daylight saving time, people hated it. They thought it was a good idea, and then they did it, and they really, because the winters were so excruciating. So I think it was tried in Russia at one point. It was tried in the 70s, like we've been saying. And Arizona and the other states that have no time change only do standard time. So I don't think that permanent daylight saving time has ever actually worked. It's just that most of us can't remember. You know, I wasn't born yet when the 70s time change happened. But you see pictures of kids waiting for the bus, you know, in the dark. And, as Dr. Abbott mentioned, there were a lot of accidents in the morning. So it was eliminated pretty quickly. So it has not ever worked, whereas permanent standard time has worked and continues to work for the places that observe it.
What about this switch? I mean, Julian, we're almost out of time, but... you know, there was the National Association of Convenience Stores testified before Congress saying that it should keep the current arrangement of switching, which I guess is a third view we don't often hear as much from. I mean, I don't know. Is that a balancing act, as this group said, or a compromise? Does it work as a compromise?
Yeah, if we had to choose between continuing to switch and permanent daylight saving time, we would definitely choose continuing to switch for all the reasons that Heather just underscored. The winters would be intolerable if we stayed on daylight saving time through the winter. Most of us don't have any idea what that would be like.
When you say intolerable, you mean the fact that a lot of people are arriving to work or school and it's like an hour before sunrise still, or 2 hours even.
It's very bad for, we don't feel good. It's bad for our health. It's dangerous. It's bad for our children. It just, people really didn't like it. It's never succeeded. So we would never vote for that. But if we had to choose, we would choose the switch over permanent daylight saving time.
So standard time or what we do now. And then last of all, permanent daylight saving is where you come down. All right. We're going to have to leave it there. Heather Turgeon and Julie Wright are psychotherapists who specialize in sleep and parenting. They've written multiple books together, including on point for what we've been talking about today, Generation Sleepless, Why Tweens and Teens Aren't Sleeping Enough and How We Can Help Them. Thank you so much. I've enjoyed your writing as a parent, and I've enjoyed your contributions today on the show. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Again, we originally spoke with Heather and Julie in the fall of 2024. Daylight saving time for 2026 begins this Sunday. That's it for us today. Coming up on Monday, Sunday marks 70 years since Thurgood Marshall came to the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. He would later become a Supreme Court Justice. At the time, he was a prominent civil rights lawyer. We'll revisit a conversation we had about that visit in early 2024. We'll listen back to some of his speech and talk about the fight for equal rights 70 years on. We appreciate hearing from you about our programs and your suggestions for future guests or stories. You can email us, talk@21stshow.org is our address, and you can find that and every other way to contact us on our website, 21stshow.org. That's 21stshow.org. We've got our past programs there, or you can find links to our podcast. Or just look us up on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you listen. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Colson Khan. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again on Monday.